November 22nd, 2017. It's Watch Pedro Show. Pedro Show. Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I'm in Pedro. Brother Matt had a switch over on his physical therapy because of his hip replacement. By the way, he went, I think, walking without the cane. But he's been doing therapy in the pool, the Channel Street. No, not Channel Street. We used to call it the Gaffey Street. They got another stupid name for it when they reopened it earlier this year. Actually, Brother Matt's mom was instrumental in making that happen. But anyway, a man alone, but not actually alone because of the miracle of them engineers in Estonia coming up with their Skype software. I am making a connect to Jeremy Gustin in, well, he's on tour, so he's in Oklahoma City, well, Oklahoma?
Well, no, I'm not on tour. I'm in Oklahoma. I'm in my sister's basement right now.
You're on a little trip.
I'm just doing the Thanksgiving thing, and she has three kids and a bunch of animals, and it's total beautiful chaos upstairs right now.
And, is it Oklahoma City, though?
Yeah, I mean, it's like right outside.
So I'm not totally wrong.
No, you're totally right.
Well, like if you go to school there, you're Norman.
Right. Yeah, I did play in Norman once.
Yeah. Yeah, there used to be a club there called Rome. Actually, I think it was called Rome. I remember my first Oklahoma City gig or Oklahoma gig was someplace called the Bowery. We cocked at a dude's pad named Luigi.
Okay.
His name was Luigi. Later, we found out his name was Wayne Coyne.
Oh, right. They're all around here.
But I guess he worked at a Long John Silver, and he found a name tag that said Luigi, so he always wore this. And we didn't even know he was in a band. He had all this artwork. We knew he was an artist because there was all this drawings all over his pad. And, you know, D-Boom was an artist, so they could relate on that level. Mm-hmm. Jeremy, I want a little background. How I got to meet you personally, it was about a month ago here in my Pedro town. I just
That's
got
right.
off a tour, and there was a festival called Growler 6 by the Lane Victory here, where the Sanzanita blew up in 1978. And the band that went on before me and my second man was Delicate Steve and the Stick Man with the beat in his hand, Jeremy Gustin.
Yeah, that was an amazing festival. Did you get to hang out? Like
I saw Guided by Voices, which was incredible. I got to see Tina Rowan. That's from Mali.
Oh, Tanariwen.
Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Tanariwen. Yeah, that's Tanariwen. Heavy. It's beautiful.
I got to meet a couple of them because I know Billy, a guy that they live with out in the desert when they come visit. I actually heard about him years ago from Flea, but now... And, in fact, the bass man told me Flea gave him a bass, that one he was playing upside down because he's left-handed.
Oh, wow.
Jeremy, what's your oldest musical memory?
Well, fuck, I mean, I've been playing music my whole life. It started more with classical music. I was playing, like, recorder first, then woodwinds, like oboe, stuff like that. But, I mean, I think my first memories are really probably playing on pots and pans, stuff like that, with wooden spoons, I guess.
I mean, you wouldn't have to be playing. It could be like hearing radio in the car or shit in the living room. But if playing pots and pans in the kitchen. So you knew you were going to be a drummer. You were a little boy, right?
Yeah, well, no. I kind of went around and did some different stuff before coming back to drums.
I want an idea of what your pad was like growing up. Did you have people in your family that played music?
Oh, yeah. So my grandfather was in the Boston Symphony Orchestra, which was an orchestra my dad worked for. So I literally grew up, and he worked at this music festival called Tanglewood in Western Massachusetts. So literally every summer I was just seeing classical music and going to rehearsals and seeing jazz, and people like James Taylor and Bob Dylan would come there too. So it was just like... Music 24/7. I mean, it's...
Yeah, Bob Dylan, James Taylor, not too classical. What did your grandfather play?
Bassoons.
Oh, wow. Double
yeah.
B. You know what's trippy about bassoons? Have you ever been to... Probably been to Barcelona.
Yeah.
Barcelona. And this Familia Sang... Sangra Familia... The Anton... Gaudi Church.
Oh, yeah. So weird.
Yeah, you know, usually angels are playing harps, right? Well, they're playing bassoons there.
Oh, my God.
Right by the hatch. I think it's still got another 20 years to build. You know, that thing's been a long time coming. I spaced on saying what we played. We opened the show up with Delilah live November 20, 1961, John Coltrane. And then we heard the Ah with Dearest Blue. The Ah People is a solo proj, but Jeremy, he'll get into telling us about that later. So you're growing up around music. Is there instruments in the pad?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's
piano,
various woodwinds, a piano, yes, and percussion. And my mom plays cello as well. My sister played clarinet. So there was instruments everywhere. And there was always music playing.
Were you encouraged to try and play something?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it was just the whole, it was all classical music encouragement, really. It was kind of like, practice your oboe, be in the orchestra, be in the wind ensemble, all this stuff, which is stuff I loved doing. And to be honest, I missed playing in orchestras and stuff. But the drums is something that, like, no one encouraged or asked me to do lessons or asked me to practice. I kind of found that myself, bought the drum set from the local pizza man, figured out how to do it all on my own. So it was kind of my own personal thing.
There actually is drums in classical music. It's not maybe a trap kit so much, but I know there's timp, for sure.
Yep.
And there's some crash cymbals and triangles and stuff like that.
Was
the oboe the first thing you played?
Before that, there was recorder for a few years. Okay. But yeah, oboe I started when I was like 8 or 9.
This ain't at school. This is like private lessons.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, and I was in, like, orchestras of, like, you know, the regional around Boston where I grew up, and then the All-State, and I was in some youth orchestras and ensembles through college and stuff like that.
What about high school? Were you part of that music program?
High school got weird for me. I mean, I did still keep playing oboe in some good orchestras, but I got into, like, skipping class, doing a lot of psychedelic drugs and really getting into improvising on the drums with people, and it was like I got in my own weird world where I fell in love with improvisation and drumming and kind of realized that was going to be a big part of my life.
I just thought of something about the oboe. Nils, a client, told me a lot of oboe players get strokes. Something about the double, you got to like focus the wind too little or
the
something.
The embouchure is pretty intense. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But he also says the oboe can cut through anything.
Yeah.
There's something about that pitch where it's at. So it's usually used to represent the human voice, he told me once.
You know, the English horn I also played, which is just like a little bit bigger. It's more the register of a soprano sax. And I actually preferred that. It's like an oboe, but like a little bit of a warmer tone, which I really like.
Yeah, and what about French horn?
French horn's nice. If you can play it well, it's gorgeous.
John Entwistle. I think he does a solo on Pictures of Lily. Anyway, let's get now to drums, because this was your not assigned, not encouraged thing. This was something you did on your own. That pot and pan incident.
Yeah.
You think it was like because you were hearing percussive stuff, so you went in the kitchen and went at it?
Yeah. I mean, I have some fuzzy memories of it, but to be completely honest, I've found pictures, like multiple pictures of me as a little kid with like stuff set up in front of me, and like I saw my dad would put like vinyl record covers on chairs so I could hit the chairs without making marks. So I was always into hitting stuff, and I think I just like went away from it for a while and then just found myself back doing it.
Have you heard of this documentary, A Different Drummer, Elvin Jones? He started it's only about 25 minutes long or so, but he started on pots and pans.
They sound great. I still use them. Everything is a drum. And pots and pans is such a great kind of decay and different pitches.
I don't remember if you watched this, because you probably had to put stuff away while we were playing, but I put my drummer up front on stage.
I remember you guys were really close. Yeah, but he was behind you, wasn't he?
No, he's actually in front of me. And I was on the side, and I had his kick drum at an angle, so it would be right in my leg.
Okay.
And I just have so much respect. I mean, we should have done this in the Minutemen days. It's stupid. I'm a slow learner, but this, I call an act of denial by putting the drummer way in the back. we're almost all really playing drums. I mean, there are some melodic components, but a lot of it's just little riffs, little rhythms.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little more honest about it. I think the guys with the sticks in their hand are very honest about it. What was the first drum set that you got?
It was like an old Ludwig that looked like Ringo's kit, a four piece. Harry the Pizza Man, I remember him so well. This Greek guy in the town I grew up, and he had this little like rock kit, but he had like tons of huge cymbals like China. So he was kind of into metal, I think, like late 70s, early 80s metal stuff. So he had all these crazy cymbals and rototoms, three rototoms. He gave it all to me for $300.
George, you had some Remo rototoms. You could tune those things while you were playing them.
Man, I wish I still had them. I don't know what happened.
George, you only had a couple. He started off with one, and then I think he got a couple more, but they were over there with his little cymbal. He also had a little chorus of little splash cymbals and stuff. Look, I want to play something from your new record called Lamb Jump.
know it's been a long time since I heard the damn telephone ring. Tom, 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 no, it's been a long time, and I need a new song to sing. I got your head stop spinning, I'm on duty. I got to start moving to a burning beat. Got to stay in my time. Why do, try to get you in my life.
Down. Thank you.
For Pedro Show, that was Lamb Jump by The Ah. Then we heard Time from Maya and the Revolutionary Hell Yeah. I get to share the stage with them. 28 days, I turned 60 years old up in the city. My bottom of the hill working for Ramona. A good way to celebrate. Then out of Cleveland, brand new. I'm playing bass on this. A bunch of New York guys, but it was put together by a Cleveland man, Matt Waskovich. Essential Swearin' from Hidden Rifles, recorded by the late, great Paul Henneman. Black Moth Super Rainbow with Bad Fucking Times. The Power from Boris, which I missed their gig. They were just here. They ended their tour. Had a big-ass tour. And then Antonio Ramirez and Marco Serrato with Borja Diaz, El Cumpleaños del Mago. And finally, the Ah with Elephant Thimbles, which is two words that are trippy put together, too, like Lamb Jump. I've seen goats jump. In fact, I've never seen a more horny animal in my life than this unfixed Spanish pygmy goat. I mean, this guy was sucking himself off and pissing in his face.
Wait, where did you see the pygmy goat?
Was at this child's zoo, you know? The fixed ones, they're all calm. And so this guy was, like, flying in the air and flicking his heat, you know, frolic kind of shit. I mean, it was balls out, the most horny fucking thing. Crack of Dawn had to watch out. Anyway, okay, so you get this from Tony the Greek guy, a drum set.
Oh, Harry the Pizza Man. Yeah, Newtonville Pizza.
I didn't mean Tony. maybe that's what the thing, the pizza got me, right?
Yeah.
You know the acronym, you know Fiat, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what it stands for.
Fiat. No idea.
not the word, but the Italian auto manufacturer. Fix it again, Tony.
Okay, I did not know that.
Okay, so what do you do? Do you start you practice at home? You set it up in your garage or your bedroom?
No, basement. The basement was my church, my spot. I could go to and do whatever I wanted.
So, and nobody
so
bummed
at the time,
on nobody got
at the time, I was obsessed with the band, Levon Helm, the drummer. And
singer. Oh, yeah, Arkansas.
Yeah, and Funkadelic, like Standing on the Verge of Getting It On, that
Tall.
Record.
I think his name is Tall, right? T-A-W-L.
The drummer of Funkadelic?
Yeah.
I think it was Jerome Bigfoot Braley.
He lost his mind, right? LSD or something.
The drummer on that record, he's okay. I saw him play with James Blood Ulmer like 10 years ago. I think he's...
Well, the guy this is the first couple albums, like Maggot Brain. And
okay, I think that's a different drummer than on the record.
Well, the original guy, his name was Tal, T-A-W-L, I think. Not trying to get you in some kind of fact-check trip.
Yeah,
you know, if you were listening... No. Tall played rhythm guitar, but he did lose his mind.
Yeah,
he did lose his mind from the LSD kind of. I did a whole bunch of LSD and Tiki. That was his name. Tiki was the drummer.
Okay,
my memory. You know,
that's so
I was trying to remember back when I. Last time I used L was, I think, 1983 at Einstein's Ends in Neubauten thing in the desert. So anyway, so where did you hear these records?
Let's see. The band I got from my parents, they had the Brown album, the self-titled album, and I just remember being completely captivated by the cover and just started listening to the music, and it totally floored me. I don't know. I just became obsessed, like read every book about it, got every record, and I was just a band fanatic. And Funkadelic, I think, to be honest, I don't remember, but I just remember seeing that cover. Maybe it was a local record store, but Standing on the Verge of Getting It On, and that crazy artwork. And the music just spoke to me, and I loved the simplicity of the grooves and all the crazy singing and lyrics. And I basically put on these big-ass headphones and just played for hours, and it felt like the most incredible thing I could imagine, you know, especially coming from being in orchestras and practicing and playing through composed music. This just felt like a fresh, new, exciting world.
Actually, and, I think that's P-Funk. I think it's
what
part of the Funkadelic. Because George Clinton's yelling in that song, P-Funk.
Which song are you talking about?
Standing on the Verge of Getting It On.
No, that's definitely Funkadelic.
Well, they're both bands kind of mixed together.
Yeah, but
Parliaments was the band standing on the Verge of Getting It On. P-Funk. He yells out P-Funk. When he would use different names.
No, he says, he yells out people. People, yeah. What you doing?
Yeah, he says that too, but he would use different names of P-Funk to get different, Parliament, Funkadelics, to get different production deals.
Okay. So, sounds all right.
I think 74, because they start calling it, I think it's still called Funkadelic. I think Mothership Connection is when they use both names because he gets a deal with Casablanca. You know, he's still going. He's an incredible force.
Mm-hmm.
I got to do all of Maggot Brain with him on Doug Wimbush, Blackbird and McKnight.
Amazing.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be just some blues jam with this guy, and it turned out I was playing with these guys the whole album. Anyway, what was the first record that you bought?
Let's see. I think Beastie Boys Licensed to Ill. I remember buying that on cassette tape when I was really little.
Okay. That's right. Me and Raymond Pettibone saw that tour. They were opening for Run DMC.
Yeah.
Back in Greek. We saw it at the Greek outside, you know, at this amphitheater.
Oh, that's so cool.
Okay. What about your parents didn't care about you banging drums downstairs? That's great.
I think they liked that I was
making music.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely, I don't think, loved how it sounded for many years, but I
didn't
do it
bands?
Late at night.
What was your first band that you played with? Was it just Man Alone or playing with records?
No, yeah, the first band was called Swedish Fish, and it was me and my friend John Sussman, and we were writing songs. It was the first time I was, like, writing songs, and we were both singing. He was playing guitar, keyboard, and we'd jam and make up songs, and I have demo cassettes of them still, and it's pretty bad, but it's me, and we were having so much fun. And
no
just,
bass
like,
player.
No bass player. Yeah, it was just duo. And
well, he had the left hand of the keyboard.
Exactly, yeah. But I would play, we would do it all day, all night if we could. There was just like so many ideas, and just jamming was just like, it just felt like the most incredible thing ever. And we were starting to smoke pot, and it was just like a very exhilarating time, for sure.
What was it, still high school?
This is eighth grade, I think, right before high school.
Yeah, okay. And, so after school, you go down the basement.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. And so you're not really doing gigs. You're just having fun playing, like me and D-Boom. Yeah,
that's what it was for me with drums. That's what it was for years. I don't think I played a gig on drums till, maybe I was like 17 or something like that.
Okay, we'll talk about that next hour because we're at the end of the first one. November 22, 2017, Dish and Watt for Peter Show, special guest Jeremy Gustin. Hold tight for hour two. November 22, 2017, it's the second hour of the Watt for Peter Show.
I can remember when we made the highway our second home, how we memorized 50 miles from Kalamazoo to Grand Rapids alone, how we collected our consciousness on green signs sweeping overhead in long moments of complete aloneness before gliding into the big city, watching those cement walls glide past, getting excited about a visit, going under that final overpass into a city before this, beyond the safety glass of a window seat, a portion of me, rolling the hulls of green trees with unctuous billboards roaring before us, into the spread fingers of divided highway lanes, concrete leaving diamonds of green spaces, my heart left at the grove of trees there, clocking the lonely little sights from so many remembered trips, imprinted before being dislodged, tumbled away before progress. The blue pontoon boat tied up forever in some small anonymous lake. The low yellow cinder block house, which grew larger every year. A red Chevy pickup awkwardly straddling a billboard. A rusty little rail crane just outside the Grand Rapids. Lonely sentinel of the crawling railroad yards. These sights I learned and loved truly. They marked the passage of time. These things that marked my memory gave way to a life as I got older, and by their disappearance, booted me reluctantly along in life, rootless of pits in these rushed by me, rushings, product of a relentless meditation on the lines, going by me into the cities. What was revealed to me then, I realize now, and I believe. I see art everywhere, so unintentional, tossed together in light and circumstances. Nature is in the middle of me, in the left lane at 60 miles per hour, by the cracked, weedy sidewalks in the city, right in the middle of the heart and the heat and the despair. Nature, true nature. Young adulthood rocks invading Detroit, going in to see a big-time show, rushing a little more thoughtlessly now into my legions of highways, children, childhood farms approaching, receding, and being discarded by the long, slanting walls that bank the freeway into the city, cement filling up to my eyeballs, filling up my world with concrete, darkness, light patch, and exhaust. My introduction into the city. Love to be there, face the anonymous streams full of people, cars, ignoring me in the concrete I love. Me accepting it all with my open, hungry gaze, the signature of my life, a ribbon of road, and I have music with my wheels. I have Motown dominant on the radio, giving me soul and my immaturity. Where was the love you said was mine, all mine, till the end of time? Was it just a lie? But where was the love? You told me that you'd never leave me, and that you'd never say goodbye. Don't need me hanging on a promise. You've got to let me know. A chance to feel sadness in my silly youth, aware of the passion of the music. Together, the concrete and the song made the highway, and my willingness to this gateway, time to stop doing one thing and try out something new. I really believe that if I sat up and looked enough, was vigilant and sincere enough, things would change on the way in. It sure made life exciting to expect that, on the edge of something new. Hail the rectangular green signs looming overhead as we sailed down under the final overpass, every major junction, every turning point in life. All the old that I left behind was there on or near a freeway. They paved the way into campgrounds, new stages, new states of life. I look back and love what I had seen myself go through. A world edging those concrete walls, a world that laughed at my loneliness and made me feel so excited. Reaching out to touch those concrete arms held me and brought my soul through. Soaring forever on that musical freeway, past green rectangles, billboards, and grass, literally driving through my life, leading under that final overpass.
Politician and a climate change denier. I said, if you're a politician and a climate change denier, you're either a natural born fool or much more likely just a shameless liar. Climate change denier. owned and paid for by Exxon, Mobil, and Shell. I said your services are bought and paid for by Exxon, Mobil, and Shell. You know you're that trusty lapdog. I know you're making lots of money now as a shill for fossil fuel. I see you're making lots of money now as a shameless shill for fossil fuel. Ah, but your children and their children's children will pay the price. How can you be so cruel? Climate change, you wish denier. Ah, well, I guess the same old story. Earthly greed corrupts the soul. Well, I know it's the same old story. Earthly greed corrupts your soul. I believe that you're this world's grave digger, and you sure are digging us a deep dark hole. Climate change denier. What we need to obliterate. Said you're exactly what we need. What we need to obliterate. Got to get you out of power before it's too late.
There's no need for an extra wish to leave this world.
Watford Pedro show. Started hour two off with the Odd doing Black Cloud Shadows. Then Joe Brewer with Concrete Nostalgia. Sam Bennett, Joe Brewer out of Madison. Sam Bennett out of Tokyo with Climate Change Denier Blues. The Healers out of Chicago.
Yeah, it's West Chicago,
Salt Valley, I think it's called. Death Wish, Maximilian the First from Rome with Spelogia Atomica, and then the Ah with Incline for Wren, which I guess is the bird. The Wren, it's with the W, people. Back with Jeremy talking about his music journey. So tell me about your first gig.
Okay, well, it's the only time this ever has happened in my life, because I don't typically get stage fright or anything like that. I love performing. But this first gig was at the Brendan Behan Pub in Jamaica Plain. I'd never played in a bar before. And it was just like, we set up, we were ready to play, and then they looked at me to start the tune, and it was like, I did not remember anything. Like, I just didn't know how the music went anymore, and it was a very scary moment for me. And thankfully, it hasn't happened since. But he just had to, like, the guitarist just, like, sang the riff, and then it all came back. But it was just that, like...
You're talking about the first tune of the set.
Yeah, but it was, like, at that moment, everything had disappeared from my world. Like, I didn't know how to do anything, and it was very scary. But then it all came back, and it was fine. But it was just that, like, probably 30 seconds, and the band was looking at me like, what are you doing?
What are you not doing?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Did you guys have a lot of practice?
Did we have what?
A lot of practice before that?
Yeah.
So it was the moment just seizing you up.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. And the gig was fine. I mean, it wasn't
what
a great
was the name
band,
of this band?
But it was... That was called Three Times Fast.
Three Times Fast. Were you guys, did you have good quick tempos?
You know, it was kind of like a funky jam situation with guitar, keys, and drums. Just like a vehicle to jam and make like dancey grooves, you know. And it would probably be pretty embarrassing for me to listen to.
Three Times Fast?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you guys ever record? Do you remember your first recording?
Yeah, we recorded something at Emerson College in the studio there. But nothing. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where it is. But
did this band tour?
No. This
when
was,
did you
yeah,
start
just when I was like 17.
When did you start touring?
Well, so I stayed in. So I'm from Boston, and I stayed around Boston for a bit, and like I really just was a local musician there for years. Just and I played all around New England a bunch, but I didn't do crazy touring until I moved to New York, which was like 9 years ago. And the first big tour I did was with a singer named Larkin Grimm, and we got in a Prius and rode around the U.S. for like I think 2 months.
A Prius.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that long ago.
It was in 2008, I think.
That's how old those cars are. Okay.
It was a new car. It was exciting that it was quiet and didn't take much gas.
You know, my sister's got one, yeah. I'm just trying to put my mind when they came around. I always think of them things as really modern. Okay.
Yeah.
But you know what? You were talking 9 years ago. That's a little strange. You know... Yeah, sorry. Sometimes when I relate to other musicians, sometimes I think I'm always their age.
Right.
That's one of the righteous things about music. It doesn't care about your hair color and stuff.
No.
But, okay, so you got a drum set inside a Prius?
Yeah. I mean, Larkin made sure that we had everything right with this tour because she wanted to keep the cost low. And, yeah, I used, like, a 16-inch bass drum, floor tom, snare, one cymbal, hi-hat. She had a little harp and 12-string electric, and she just went direct into PA. We were opening for bigger bands. We were playing some bigger rooms and just went right into the house.
Wow.
And it worked. It worked out.
Well, that's great. Here, we're going to play Slight Beans. Thank you.
synthetic earthquake. me and him.
Anyone ever?
Nobody.
Pedro show, we heard Slight Beams from the Ah, and then Matt Jones, he's from Massachusetts, but he's in Busan, Korea now, with a demo of Synthetic Earthquake, Mold Omen from Passages Through Stone, they might be Baltimore, East Coast, Fighting, I think they're Manchester, England, Baseline Al, and finally, German Nota Youth with Super Mario Blast.
What about this project, The Odd? You sent me this album, and I really dig, man.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I mean, I guess I didn't really mean to make it. It's kind of what happens is, like, I spend all this time when I write music for bands, and I write music for my other band called Star Rover. When I write for the band, I always make a demo of the song, and then I bring it to the band, and then the band learns it, and then we alter it to be able to do it live. And when the songs don't work for the band, I just have these kind of demos. But I put so much time into the demos, and I've kind of over the years found out this strange way to sample sounds and edit sounds and mix sounds.
Not just do and drums, right? You're creating like kind of a model of what you want the band to do.
Yeah, but I don't always think about it so much, like how we're going to do it. So a lot of times it doesn't work for the band, or it just has to be drastically changed. But,
sure.
It's a but start I just put place. So much time into creating this demo that yeah. when people started hearing them, the demos, they'd really be like, man, like this is special sounding. Like nothing else sounds like this. You should do something with these demos. And I don't know, last year at the time, all my roommates had made solo records, and something just clicked. And I was like, I should just finish all this stuff that's sitting on my hard drive. And that's what I did, and that's what became The Ah, and that's this world of these sounds. And it's like, and there's no drum set on the whole record, which also somehow felt significant for me, because that's basically what I'm known for doing. And it's, yeah, it's me just creating all these sounds. And there's a lot of sampling, there's a lot of animal sounds that I sampled and play on a keyboard, and like I don't know, I never even thought about how I would do it live or anything. Just I wanted to create a world as best as I could.
Yeah, like you put these demos together as part of a process, but then you start mm-hmm. realizing they were ends unto themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's I think that's valid. You know, music is music. The way yeah. what it's intended for, the way you do it.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, do people really know when it's coming out the speakers? Right?
Yeah.
It stands on its own, right? So it's a trip.
Yeah.
It's neat to talk about these things, because I think people think they only come certain kinds of ways. They come from all different kinds of ways, I think.
That's right. And, you know, I make a living really playing as a sideman in different kinds of people's bands, and it's something I love to do, and I love to play, you know, rock and roll, and I love to play fucked up free jazz and everything in between. But with this, it was like not supposed to be a specific thing. So it's like my product. I can make it sound like however I want. What's the kind of music that's me? You know, it's a weird thing to think about it. And because I didn't think about it, and the music just kind of happened naturally over the course of time, it is what it is. And like it or not, it's me. And it really, it does feel that. And a lot of my friends that hear the record just all say it's like it's so.
I feel
weird.
It too, Jeremy. I feel it. Look, we're at the end of the end of the second hour, 2017, November 22 edition of Wat for Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour three. November 22, 2017. It's the third hour of the Wat for Pedro Show. Fly for Pedro show started the third off hour off with the odd doing I Change Color. Now, trippy spelling here, because you're from New England, right? Not England.
I'm from New England, exactly. Yeah,
right, but you got the U in color.
Yeah, that's right.
You're allowed to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, it's that's okay. Come on.
It's an intuitive thing sometimes. It just doesn't spell right.
At least you ain't using the accent.
Yeah.
Okay. By order of the infinite. You know guys like this, they go to England in 2 weeks talking like Mike Kane. I got a buddy named Willie from Brooklyn. He's been there over 25 years. He's going to be on the show next week. And he don't talk anything like that. In fact, he lives on a boat in a canal in London. He's a plumber.
Oh, wow.
He's a great cat. Good drummer. Awesome. Man. But originally Brooklyn guy. David Gerard, a Massachusetts guy. And Christian Fissell with By Order of the Infinite, Version B. And finally from Hamburg, Germany. FGH, Making Space, number one. So, yeah, you just wanted to put the Ah album out and not have to worry about it being played in front of people doing gigs.
Yeah, the music was basically created without me thinking about even making it.
Yeah, it got repurposed.
Yeah. And now I'm excited to be able to share it. This label, NNA, helped put it out. And you'll have to see what happens with it. Maybe I'll try it live somehow. But that was never the intention when the music was created.
Now, you were talking about the Sideman stuff. I saw you with Delicate Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the main Sideman thing you're doing right now?
No, not at all, actually. I used to play with Steve a lot. I've been on the road with him a shitload, but I haven't been for the last few years. This was the first tour I'd done with him in a while.
But you did get to...
Because I was in,
what's that?
Say again?
I'm sorry.
Oh, I said this really worked out because I was going to be in L.A. already doing some other gigs and session stuff, and just the timing worked out. And I love Steve. It just seemed like a perfect excuse to do some gigs with him again.
I'm going to have him on the show soon.
Oh, great.
Great. Don't miss ahead. I had met him a few years ago and kind of spaced, and then it came back to me.
Yeah.
God, I hate when that happens. Okay, so what? I know you got to do some stuff with Yuka Honda, right?
Well, yeah, I was just telling you, I went over to their studio and did some improvising with her. There's a band called Exotech that I play with, which is kind of this improv collective led by the singer Sophia Bruce and Kimbra, and Yuka's done that a bunch, and we connected and figured we should try something together.
And so just freewheeling. Like,
it was totally free. We had no idea what we were going to do. And based on my playing with Yuka before, I figured maybe she'd do some loops or... I really didn't know. But we talked a lot and had a really great time. And she's really into ambient music right now and basically just created ambient sounds. And I just got really into playing with the space and not really playing any grooves. Just... you know, I remember I put like 30 drumsticks all over the kit and was playing with them, flopping around, and just, I don't know, having fun with the space. It was great.
Playing the holes, kind of minimalist.
Minimalist or the opposite of minimalist, but not like in time, really. Just, yeah, exactly, but just like textures.
God, whenever I hear that word maximalist, I get so scared because it's like there's only one way that it's going.
Yeah,
just one way. Sometimes I feel there's a big weight of that on us all,
mm-hmm.
You know, this Thanksgiving. I'm going to play this song here, Green Waves. What about it?
What's that?
What about it?
Well, I remember sitting in a church or chapel seeing a performance of some modern classical music, and there's these trees up against the windows, and they were kind of making this motion that looked like they were waving at me, and they were like these big green leaves. And that's when I was like, and I like wrote down the word green waves. And then something about this tune when I first wrote the main part made me think of being underwater, and I sampled these dolphins swimming, which is in the track. And then I made a music video for it, which is some old found footage of scuba divers that seemed to work pretty well.
Well, let's listen.
take it, did you? Did you? Well, give it back, communist motherfucker.
last music for this edition, Green Waves from the Where'd you get the name for the band, the
Oh, man, it's funny because you were just talking about if to ask somebody what their song means or not. And for me, I was, you know, talking about the songs is not a big deal, but talking about the name, the is somehow more complicated for me. It's a whole funny, long story that's evolved over time. And it doesn't really make any sense. So the way I like to look at it now is that it feels like a world. It's a place, and that's how I like to think of the music that I created for it. So the Ah is just this kind of make-believe, kind of cartoon-like world, and that just felt like an appropriate title for it.
So it has nothing to do with that guy in the bear suit and The Shining?
No, not that I know.
Okay. Swampy from Kurt Stifel and The Swing Shift, Mailman after that with My Fault, and finally the Ah with Hazel Club. I bookended because Green Waves, and my pop had hazel eyes, which is a kind of green.
Yeah, that's right. I have hazel eyes myself.
Oh, well, does yours change?
Yeah, some days are more brown, some days more green.
When my pop got pissed, his would turn more gray, like slate, like cement.
They don't go gray.
But it was really trippy because they weren't always the same. They would change, you know. The Hooskers had that song called Green Eyes. And
I was Yeah. I used to play that song with the band.
That's a beautiful.
I love that song.
I think it's only two parts. A lot of their tunes. Sometimes one part, right? Divide and Conquer. I think Land of a Thousand Dances is one part. Lime and the Coconut.
Maybe.
There's some songs you don't have to change parts.
No.
Just, I think American Woman is one part. You just change the words. Or you put some stuff. That had a trippy drum beat. It didn't really have the rock and roll backbeat. It was kind of like Native American. That was American Woman by this Canadian band, Guess Who?
Oh, yeah.
I think out of Winnipeg. And it was the first 45 I ever bought. A lot of floor tom. I think that it goes around on the floor tom.
I love floor tom.
Like that. So it's trippy for rock and roll. But, you know, they were doing rock and all kinds of influences. Those were trippy times.
Mm-hmm. I think the only live drumming on this record is floor tom.
Is that right?
I played back through a dictaphone. Yeah.
Dictaphone.
Yeah, I'd play the floor tom live, and then it would come out of the monitors, recorded into a dictaphone, and then I'd play it out of the dictaphone, mic'd the speaker on the dictaphone, going back into the computer.
And a dictaphone's a thing, not really for music; it's for dictation, right?
That's how it was intended, but that's not what I did.
You repurposed it.
Yeah.
What's in the future? Well, you already told me that you might start playing the live. Who's the next prod you go out with as side man?
Let's see. This band, Rubble Bucket, I'm doing some stuff with coming out. Delegate Steve. There's some shows with the singer Jesse Harris.
I think Jesse Petra played with Jesse, right?
Yeah, exactly. I made this record with Jesse and Petra. That's me.
Right. And I don't know if you played. I saw a gig with them at... up on Fairfax, I can't remember, an old, like, vaudeville theater. Maybe you were there, maybe you weren't. I don't know. I remember Vincent Gallo came out and sang Moon River or something. Where
in
can
LA?
People find you, Jeremy, on the web, on the internet?
Well, the Facebook is not a bad spot to find me, just under my full name, Jeremy Gustin. The Ah does have a page as
well.
Let's
spell that, Jeremy. Gustin.
Yep. Exactly. I basically just use Facebook to promote gigs and records I'm doing, and I'd say find me there.
Okay, what advice would you give to somebody getting into this racket?
To stay excited, and that can be hard sometimes, but however you can be as excited as possible. It's like a full-time job to do that, and just whatever makes you excited and inspired to keep going. That's kind of my main MO.
That's what you would tell somebody. I think that's great advice.
Because it's not easy, and you have to seek out stuff.
You mean prevent yourself from getting jaded.
It's easy to get jaded and depressed and sad and distracted all the time. So if you make an effort to find the right people, the right books, the right movies, the right music, the right way to look around the world. I take walks every day for a few miles to just try to find images. Like, I like take photos and stuff, and just whatever keeps you excited. I don't know. It's just like
Jeremy, it's great. And I really like what you're doing. And drummers around the world should be proud of you. I am.
Thanks,
man.
I'm
not a drummer. I'm a wannabe drummer. But keep on keeping on, please. And thanks for coming on the show. November 22nd edition of 2017 edition of the Watt from Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.